Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
That's right. Do it no matter what the people say.
No matter.
They don't even know.
They don't know.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for joining us. I think that's the Latin Rhythm section. I think that's who that band is. Yeah, that's who that is. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. And, Joan, I was just paying a little tribute to my cousin, Don Blasingame, who died before yesterday. And, you know, he played 18 holes of golf with his son. All three of his children were there for a visit. He played 18 holes of golf with his son, came home, visited a little bit. Talked to his brother, his only remaining brother, for an hour on the phone.
Right.
And then went to bed and woke up in heaven.
Gosh.
Now, is that a way to go?
Boy.
I mean, I miss him. I a lot of people will think fondly of him when they find out about his passing, because he gave a lot of people a lot of thrills. But what a way to go.
Boy, it's the way anybody would want to go, I think.
I've told my kids, if that's what happens to me, if I go quickly for whatever reason, you know, it's okay to miss me, but don't grieve.
Right.
Because that's
don't
a
worry.
That's
don't worry.
Well, Joan, will you miss me?
Desperately.
Oh, I knew I could count on you, Joan.
Of course.
How's the pollen in Washington? It's killing me here.
It's pretty bad here, you know, but it's a beautiful time of year because we're at the tail end of the cherry blossoms, but we've got everything out, the dogwoods and everything else is in bloom. But for those of us who are allergy sufferers, it can be kind of a rough time.
Well, I don't know if you can tell, but I can't seem to get my throat completely, my voice completely squared away because I guess it's the pollen, I don't know. But anyway, Jonas, another group of people who are having trouble besides the pollen are U.S. automobile manufacturers.
Boy, and this is a rather dire prediction we have here.
Yeah,
we're talking about the U.S. Manufacturers, which, of course, are the big three, Ford, GM, and Daimler Chrysler. We're saying by the end of the decade, which is only 5 years away, that one of them, there's an even chance that one of them will be gone.
50-50. I can't believe it.
50-50.
You guys are pretty pretty bold here with this prediction.
Yes, we certainly are.
I mean, Ford, GM, and Daimler Chrysler.
Yeah.
You know, I would have understood that maybe if Chrysler were all by itself, but Daimler Chrysler is being part of the mix.
Well, you've probably read Daimler Chrysler is having its problems, but I think GM is the one really in the spotlight now. I think there's been talk that their bonds will be downgraded to as possibly as low as junk status.
That, I think the Journal basically said that yesterday.
Yeah.
That they were
headed
in that direction.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's pretty significant.
So things are not going well.
No, exactly. So what are they going to have to do to survive with the two of the three?
Well, it's easier said than done. We're saying compete better with their foreign rivals, but I guess the question is how to do that. You know, because the big thing I think they need to do is cut labor costs, but that's going to be very tough, as you know.
Well, as you to use your words a minute ago, easier said than done.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's one of the challenges that they've got, and you know, in their defense, Joan. Over the last 20 years or so, American automobiles, the quality of American automobiles, at least some of the companies, has increased significantly. Now, in truth, they had a long way to go because in the 70s and early 80s, they'd gotten down pretty bad.
Right, that's true.
But they saw the, you know, they got the religion with the foreign competition and realized they had to put more improvements into their cars, and they are a lot more reliable these days.
Which they did, or we'd already be talking about one of them having been gone long ago.
Well,
I think
be talking about, well, you know, on this day 10 years ago, GM and Ford closed up. You know,
right.
What we'd be reporting.
Exactly.
But you know, Joan, another thing that's happening, as you know, is a lot of these foreign car makers are bringing their factories over here. They're insourcing, as we would say.
Yes, that's true.
Mazda and Honda and Toyota.
That's not new either. That's been going on for a long time.
But they're still doing it, though. I mean, there are some new plants opening up.
Right, Right.
And so that's pretty significant. But Joan, you know, one wonders how many cars do we need? You know, I mean, they're making there's so many people making cars all over the world, and either making them here or importing them here. And the other question, Joan, is are they making the right kinds of cars?
Well, that's a good point. Now, now when you say,
with regard to fuel economy.
That's my question, right. Yeah. And, of course, you know, the Americans have had their big love affair with big SUVs for quite a while, and the question is becoming whether that's going to change, or it's starting to change already, maybe.
I think that will come to pass. We'll find out whether that's an issue or not over the next year. A lot of people that I know, a lot of smart people I know, Joan, besides you, are saying that a lot of the price of oil is a result of speculation. Not so much. We a year ago we thought it was supply and demand, and there is some of that. But Steve Forbes and others that have been on this show talking about this say that a lot of it is speculation. And one thing we know about speculation is it's not, you know, it's a means to an end. It's not a way of life. And whatever goes up will come down. And so when the speculation is wrung out of this and prices get down to some kind of a level, whatever that is, $40 a barrel or $50 a barrel, then I think we'll find out whether we have the right automobiles or not. What do you
think? Right, that's a good point.
Yeah. This is a fascinating graphic you guys have on page one, Joan.
Yeah, it's a little scary. Just so that your listeners can visualize this, we are showing, I guess, the annual U.S. auto production. And the big three, that number, it's now kind of plateaued, but it had been on its way down. But the foreign brand transplants are just shooting up to where, I guess, in a little over 5 years, those lines are going to cross, maybe.
Yeah, this, if you can see this graphic, folks, it's just a gradual decline of the big three, and the foreign brands have a bullet.
Right.
And it's really something, and I can always count on you guys for these cool graphics, Joan.
Thank you.
And there's a little bit of color in this one, I guess. But I like the new color that you guys have. It's not all that new. It's been, about a year or so that you guys...
I would say so,
some color. It really contributes to the graphics, doesn't it?
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, it does. Okay, Joan, we're going to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the automobile industry, primarily from the standpoint of fuel. Also, Joan mentioned the junk bonds. We're going to talk about that just a little bit more, the GM's junk bonds, and why they got into this kind of trouble. And I'll give you a hint. Pension. Right after these messages, 20 after. Stay with us.
Since I was a young boy, I played a silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That damn dumb lion kid sure plays a mean pinball.
I see light and it's passing right before my eyes. And the best is the past. Don't regret it. Time to be alive.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about the automobile industry. One thing I don't want to miss this bit of news that you guys reported this week on page one. Currently, hybrid cars have about 1% of the market. You guys are predicting in 5 years that will grow to 7%. That's pretty significant.
Well, you know, people like buying those hybrids. They really do. And I think in some cases, I know a friend of mine bought the Prius or the Prius?
Prius, uh-huh.
The Toyota, and he had to wait months because the orders were just backed up. And, of course, you know, this is what happened. You could make an analogy to back in the late 70s when people were driving all their big cars, and then people decided they needed to buy smaller cars for fuel efficiency. It was hard to get a small car. Now it's hard to get a hybrid for probably the same reason.
You know, Joan, if I lived in an urban area where I wasn't going to be making long trips and it was, you know, a lot of street driving and things like that, I'd drive one of those.
Well, and the other nice benefit when you're in a metropolitan area like Washington is we have what they call we have carpool lanes on some of our roads.
Right.
And if you're by yourself in a hybrid, you get to ride in those lanes because you're driving a hybrid.
Yeah. How about that? Joan, get back to the issue of what's happening to the car companies. We mentioned a minute ago that S&P is probably going to pull GM's bonds down to junk.
Right.
Tell us why that is.
Well, for a lot of reasons. One of them is it still astounds me that GM really has a crisis on its hands when it comes to the cost it's incurring for health care coverage.
Right. And the pension.
And the pension. And I know you had mentioned pension. I know pension is big, but it still astounds me. Please correct me if I'm wrong, because I hope I am, but I thought I read that GM workers, and this may be true of the other two of the big three as well, don't pay health insurance premiums at all.
Yeah, that's nuts, isn't it?
And for, I don't know about other wage workers, but I've been used to paying a part of my health insurance for years, and I've been watching it actually creep up each year.
One of the long-term solutions, one component of the long-term solution of health of the healthcare crisis, the healthcare affordability crisis is really what we should call it.
Yeah,
has got to be that everybody's got to have a stake in this.
Yes,
everybody. If you're a federal employee, if you're a state employee,
no question.
If you work for GM or if you work for Jim Blasingame's company or Kiplinger, everybody has got to have a stake, because Joan, not only is it the right thing, but it also makes us better consumers.
Well,
you know,
that's
if you're not
right.
a stakeholder, right. you're gonna, you know, you're, it's not your money, and you can't have people, you know, being a healthcare consumer that has no stake in what it costs.
Well, why should I bother to care if I don't have a financial stake in it at all?
That's exactly right, and I mean, folks, we're not. This is not Kansas anymore, Toto. We're not in Kansas anymore. It's the 21st century. It's a new world, and everybody. I call it the democratization of self insurance. Basically,
well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can quote me on that. You can use that if you want.
Thank you. Let me write that down.
I know you're coveting that right. coin phrase I made, but the really, if you think about it, everybody has got to be a little bit contributing to our health care,
right.
and that's what has gotten GM into a bind, and apparently I read the other day that they just can't sell enough cars and make enough profit to pay their pension.
I'm not surprised,
because it's a defined benefit.
Right.
It's a 20th century. Where they are, Joan, is they found themselves in the 21st century with 20th century obligations. Right?
I see. Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. No, you're right.
And the world and so the marketplace that they find themselves in in the 21st century is they're having to pay for 20th century mistakes, basically, that they made, or commitments that they made.
Yes.
What's the market going to do if one of these companies fold in the next 5 years, as you guys say they will? What's that going to do to the economy?
Well, we're saying we're saying trim a hair from U.S. economic growth, but we think that that the economy can withstand that.
But you're also reporting that even before that happens, these companies are going to cut back on their production, on the U.S. production.
Well, they have to streamline their models.
Right.
One of the problems we're seeing. They offer too many brands.
Exactly. And you guys point out that they may be, what are some of the brands that they may be getting rid of?
Pontiac. I mean, these are old line brands.
Yep.
Pontiac,
yep.
Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, and they've already gotten rid of, GM's already gotten rid of Oldsmobile,
right.
for example.
Exactly. Yep. So yeah, no, I think that's right, and especially when you realize that and when I was a kid, it was easy to tell a Ford from a Chevrolet, or a Pontiac from a Buick, but especially that's a better example, or a Chrysler from a Dodge, it's not that easy to tell. They all look alike in a lot of ways,
no.
don't they?
Yeah.
So why do you need all those extra models? Joan, the IRS is really getting excited about what they call the tax gap, and
as well they should.
Yeah, and so we're going to take a quick break in a few seconds, and when we come back, this is big deal, folks. And we've reported on this a little bit, but Kiplinger has some stuff to talk about on this, and Joan will be reporting that for us. And we're also going to give you a place to find Kiplinger's Family Records Organizer. How about that? That's coming up right after these messages, 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Here's Dan Fogelberg to take us out.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. My website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, your website is Kiplinger.com, isn't it?
You bet.
It's a good one, too, folks. I encourage you to go there because you can subscribe to their publications, I should say, the Kiplinger Letter, which is now in its 82nd or 3rd year, Joan. 23, what would that be, since 1923?
Oh, you're making me do math.
Well, we have to do the math now. And then that's the weekly letter, folks. That's the one Joan and I work off of. And then they've got the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there's that magazine, Joan.
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Formerly Changing Times, about 50 years ago, it was called Changing Times. And all those can be subscribed. You can subscribe and get a 30-day free trial at their website. Or there's a phone number too, right, Joan?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
While we're on that topic, Joan, there's something called a Kiplinger Family Records Organizer that you guys make available at a pretty good price, $14.95. You want to give us the information on how to get to that?
Sure. This is really interesting, and we're saying that, you know, around tax season this is good to have, but I think it's good to have any time, but to sort of keep your records in one place, easy to get to. We actually offer it in two different formats, either a CD-ROM or a book, and it costs $14.95 plus shipping and handling, or we give you a bargain. If you get both forms, or if you want two of them, you get two for $20.
All right.
So let me give you that phone number. It's a different one than I just mentioned. It's 800-280-7165, and you need to ask for operator 4.
Right.
Or if you want to go to the website, you go to Kiplinger.com, and you type in after Kiplinger.com/organizer,
right,
and you'll get to it.
And that's the Kiplinger's Your Family Records Organizer in either the book or the CD. And when you talk to operator 4, be sure to tell them that I sent you, and after she hangs up on you, call back and don't mention that again. Okay, Joan, let's talk about the IRS. The IRS has issued a report. It's gotten everybody all stirred up, hasn't it?
That's right. Well, what the IRS has discovered is the amount of tax that it does collect and the amount of tax it should be collecting, there's a big gap there of over $300 billion.
The
in other
tax
words, people.
Gap.
It's not so much people aren't filing returns, it's they're underreporting. Maybe they're claiming deductions that are inflated, or maybe they're underreporting their income. And they're finding it's not really so much from, say, underreported wages or underreported, say, capital gains or something like that, because those can be tracked pretty easily because you have things that employers and brokerages issue, like W-2s and 1099s and things like that. But what they claim to be concerned about is income of, say, proprietors, partners, S-corporation shareholders, and independent contractors, and that's what they want to go after.
Well, and it's especially the ones that they're really going after, because these are the people that get below the radar, and that is the independent contractors, especially the people or anybody who starts a new business, whether they believe they're a small business or not. If they're working for their own account, if they're out there doing services, they're consulting, whatever they may be doing, part-time, full-time, if they're home-based, they got a home-based business, whatever. Joan, in the early days, there's no silver bullet, there's no magic key that gets your brand-new business completely plugged into what you have to do to comply with the government tax collection.
Right.
It's just not there, and
sure.
It's not intuitive. It's intimidating. It's irritating and frustrating, and that's part of it. But the other part, Joan, is in those early days of a business, so many people there are two things going on. Number one, the family money and the business money is commingled.
Oh yeah.
And two, so it's hard to split it up.
Right.
And two, the money coming in may be needed to buy milk and pay rent.
That's true, too.
And most businesses are going to pay the rent before they pay the government.
Sure.
And they say to themselves, okay, I've just got to do this because I got to put milk on the table. I got to put food on the table. I got to keep the roof over the head.
Right.
And I will fix this, you know, in 6 months I'll catch up. Or, you know, it'll take them a while, you know, I won't get a letter for a while, and I'll have that fixed by then. And then maybe they never do.
Ooh.
And that's a big deal because, Joan, there are the SBA says there are 800,000 new businesses every year and 1 million by 2010.
Gosh.
New businesses. So
that's
a lot of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Stand by. Quick break. Right back with Joan Pride after these messages. It's 20 till.
Well, our hearts be like thunder. I don't know why they don't explode. I was raised by two best-fitted hands.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Joan, I'm glad you're here, too.
Thank you.
Otherwise, this wouldn't be nearly as much fun.
Oh, gee.
And it's like a dream come true for you, isn't it?
Let's not get carried away.
Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about political power play.
Okay.
What's happening in the House and the Senate?
Well, this is, I don't know if we've talked about this before or not, but the Republican leadership in the Senate is talking about something called a nuclear option, which would be a rule change that would prevent filibusters against judicial nominees. And I think this is going to be a very interesting fight to see which way this goes.
Now, if I understand it, Joan, for years, for most of the history of the Senate, there wasn't a 60% supermajority required to approve these. And somewhere along the way, I don't know, 20 or 30 or whatever years ago, this was installed. And is it an official rule or just sort of an understanding that that's the way they've been doing business?
Well, in order to cut off a filibuster, you need 60 votes.
Right.
So that, in essence, would make a 60-vote majority necessary.
Well, there was something
I thought Bush's nominees needed 2/3 of the Senate.
No, they.
Cabinet members.
No, it doesn't need that. I think the 51% is okay, but if they filibuster, you got to have 60, as you say, to
filibuster. Right, but I thought, say, a cabinet member, certain nominees, I thought needed 2/3 of
right.
the Senate.
I don't know about that.
Okay, but I'm going to have to research that one.
But the Republicans want to change the rules. Apparently, the Democrats say they're going to shut down the Senate if they try that.
Right.
And then Kiplinger asked this question, incredibly, Joan, will cooler heads prevail?
Yeah, I don't know why we bothered.
I'm not sure that there are any. I mean, what part of Republican and Democrat do you not understand, Joan?
What part of partisanship do you not understand?
That's right.
Yeah. So as we say, the only question is whether Republican leaders have the votes. Now, there are... some Republicans, old line Republicans, who don't want to change the rules, and the newer folks, I guess, do. So there's even a split, I guess, within the GOP. Whether it's enough to keep this from happening, I don't know.
Well, the Republicans, I think, Joan, come back to the original language, which is the Senate is to advise and consent.
Right.
And all the Republicans want is an up or down vote, right? And which is easy to say since they have a majority,
and the
Democrats don't mind that as long as they have the majority, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure filibusters occurred when the Democrats ruled the Senate, and I think the percentage
never did that.
They never did that. You're right. And the percentage of Bush nominees that have gone through is pretty high. I think it's higher than Clinton's. So that's another factor. This is going to be really tough, I think, either way.
But there's some collateral damage, Joan, that you guys point out from all this, and that's some of the pro-business bills that are not going to get through.
Well, and see, that's why you saw a lot of pro-business bills trying to get pushed through earlier, such as the bankruptcy reform bill, because the current concern was if the Senate did grind to a halt, that the pro-business bills that the GOP wanted to get through would really languish.
Right. Yeah. And you got the energy bill, you got the highway bill, the asbestos. That's a trust, I mean, a fund that they're trying to come up with.
Right. Well, that's already having its problems, though.
Right.
But.
And then the taxes. Didn't I see, Joan, where the complete and final abolishment of the death tax was passed in the House yesterday?
Yes, but it's going to have more trouble in the Senate. But I don't want to get ahead of myself because we'll be talking about that in next week's letter.
Okay. But those pesky, that pesky Senate, they can't seem to, they don't work and play well with others, do they?
Right. That's one way to look at it.
So anyway, what do you think? So you think probably cooler heads will not prevail. So will anything get done, Joan, in Congress this year?
Well, again, it depends on whether this so-called nuclear option gets passed, whether anything gets done.
Mm-hmm.
And we say coming up short might be a blessing in disguise for the GOP,
right.
And then that avoids a shutdown.
Joan, let's move on down and talk about human resources. Drugs, you say, you guys report this week that drug costs are going to soar 16% this year.
Gee.
How are we going to handle that?
And that's just the drugs. That's not your overall health care cost.
Exactly.
Just the drugs. Well, we're saying to go ahead and go back over your drug benefit plan to see if you may need to switch pharmacy benefit managers.
Well, this is another example, Joan, of everything that we've every aspect of our health care delivery system, we've got to go back and check it, don't we? I mean, we basically can't leave any stone unturned in terms of trying to save a nickel here and a nickel there.
That's right.
Whether it's drugs or whether it's the medical care, hospitals. You know, Joan, we as we talked earlier, most of us grew up in the 20th century when we went to the hospital, we didn't ask how much the procedure was going to be, we didn't ask how much the doctor was going to charge, we didn't ask how much this or that was, because it was the 20th century and we had our health care covered. We can't.
That's right.
We got to be smarter, don't we? I mean, we wouldn't buy tires without asking how much they're going to be.
Yeah.
We didn't do that in the 20th century.
You're right.
So we got to start doing that, folks. We've all got to do that. It's all part of the process. Part of the runaway expenses for health care is our own fault. Tintel, stay with us.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write.
We're back at 7:10. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, celebrating. We're in our eighth year together, Joan.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it?
No,
I'm sorry. It's our seventh year together. It's our seventh year, I think, isn't it?
Wow.
Which is so many, I can't keep up, Joan.
Either.
and now I'm sorry I started you on that defined benefit program 6 years ago, Joan.
Too bad.
Yeah, because I'm
late. I'm now vested.
That's right. After 5 years, you're vested,
yeah.
Right?
Thought it would never last that long.
Joan, people have been selling their frequent flyer miles. They've been selling those things, and the airlines say that's against the rules.
I know. That's interesting.
And they're going to start auditing people, aren't they?
Yeah. Boy, I mean, won't that cost money to do that auditing?
And how do you do it?
I don't know how you do it, and I don't know. I just think that they're grasping at straws here.
Well, they may just try to find two or three and make an example of them or something. You know, hang them up on the gate or something.
Yeah.
But so, folks, forewarned is forearmed. The airlines are going to start auditing frequent flyer accounts. Joan, also, let's talk about about passports. There's some news in the passport world, isn't there?
That's right. We're saying that if you want to go to Canada or Mexico, you have to take your passport. And it used to be your driver's license was good enough.
You just wander over there.
But we're saying not anymore, which I'm wondering. I'm guessing, you know, I can remember going to, say, the U.S. Virgin Islands and not needing a passport for that. And I realize it's a U.S. territory, but you're flying usually into Puerto Rico first, so I'm wondering if we would have to take our passports for that as well.
Well, Puerto Rico, of course, is part of the U.S. Of
True,
course, as
but
you know.
See, we're leaving the mainland, so I'm beginning to wonder if I don't know. But in any case, I'm getting too far afield here. The point is that just going across the border to Canada or Mexico requires a passport now. So that shows you that we're in the post 9/11 era.
Exactly, and see, the Joan, I think the significance here is, most Americans don't have passports.
Really?
Virtually all Americans have driver's license. Joan, you're an international, you know, you're an international jet setter, so I know that's
True.
Amazing.
Okay, that's good point.
That's major news to you, but most Americans don't have passports. And if they have ever had one, you know, it's very likely that it's out of date.
Expired.
Yeah, and so this is it's a bigger deal, Joan. You know, a metrosexual like you, you know, Joan, and an international.
What did you call me?
that you know, you ever heard that term, metrosexual?
Yes, I have, but I only heard it applied to men.
Oh, is that right? Okay, well, yeah. I guess I misunderstood.
Be careful there, but
I have to be careful. Anyway, the thing is, though, is this is going to impact travel to Canada and Mexico.
Yeah,
for average Americans.
That's right.
Or it's going to be a big boon to the passport business.
Well, it's the passport business. Maybe it's great for the guys who take the pictures, but
the photos,
business is done by the government, and the lines are already too long.
Well, what does it take, about 6 weeks to get a passport?
Yeah, it's a pain in the neck.
So, I mean, you know, a lot of people.
And what about people who don't live near a passport office? Well, they have to mail it in, I guess.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Now, this is going to be, there's going to be a little bit of an uproar, I think, about this.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, no question, I think.
What's going on with CAFTA, Joan, the Central American Free Trade Agreement?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. Sorry, I don't mean to disparage it. It's just that
I
don't
know. Was there a little sarcasm
there,
Joan?
No. No, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, we're saying, is in trouble. It doesn't have enough votes to pass the House because of different members of Congress who have particular interests in their districts, particular agricultural interests, that are worried that business would be hurt in their districts by this agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But the president has a free trade agenda, so it's going to be a problem.
Free trade is good for everybody. It just, but there are winners and losers. But the losers don't have to be losers forever. They just, you know, we need to be trading everywhere, Joan. We need to have customers. We need to be customers, and we need to find customers all around the world. And so I think he's right on that. Tony Blair, Joan, you guys say he's going to win a third term.
Yeah, we just sticking our neck out and saying that.
But
I
it'll
think.
Be his last.
Oh.
Is that what you got? That's what you
well,
say?
Well, that's true. We do say that. But because we figure he'll step down before his term ends. I think the reason he'll win the third term is that there isn't a lot of, I mean, the opposition, I guess, hasn't mustered a good enough candidate, maybe.
But the big news, folks, is that metrosexual only applies to men. Joan, I didn't know that.
Well, that's how I've heard the term used.
How about, but you prefer international jet setter, right?
Oh, I'd love that, yeah.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she is the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners everywhere. And remember, today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.